I will call Matthew A. Pryor versus the State of Texas, cause number 17316CV. Mr. Jones, all yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. And again, for the record, my name is Ronnie Jones, and I represent Matthew Pryor. This case is an appeal on behalf of my client regarding a final summary judgment and a permanent injunction in favor of the plaintiff, the State of Texas, against my client that was signed by the trial court on May 2nd of 2017. I'm here seeking review of the final summary judgment and a permanent injunction that was signed by the court because the trial court erred by finding that no fact issues regarding the ownership of the underground storage tanks on the land in question was raised by my client, and that the summary judgment record established that legal title to the underground storage tanks on the land in question was conveyed by my client. As the court knows, because of the propriety of a summary judgment being a question of law, we contend that this appellate court should review the trial court's record granting the summary judgment in this case in favor of the State of Texas by the de novo standard. We think, therefore, the court should review the evidence in this case in the light more favorable to my client and resolve all doubt and all indulgences and every reference against the state and in favor of my client. Regarding the summary judgment, to prevail on a traditional motion for summary judgment, the state had to conclusively establish the absence of any genuine issue of material fact that made it entitled to a summary judgment as a matter of law. To win on summary judgment on its cause of action, the state could only rely on uncontroverted evidence, which they clearly did not do in this case based on the record that's before the court.
Mr. Jones, isn't the rub here whether your client actually owns the property at issue, and then the subset of that is whether he has ownership of those storage tanks?
Yes, sir.
Does he claim to not own the surface rights, or he's claiming just not to own the storage tanks?
He's claiming not to own the surface right or the storage tanks.
Okay, and then what's the effect of this water code provision that seems to have a presumption that's placed on him if he was the surface owner as to the tanks?
We think, Judge, I think that's overridden by the exception to that presumption in law, as I stated in my brief, because fraud was alleged in this case regarding the deed. So if the allegation is that it was fraud in the deed and that there's evidence to support that, we think that raised a fact issue, and the case should have been sent to trial to be tried, because we believe the law clearly established that the exception to the normal rule that a warranty deed is conclusive is that if there's an allegation of fraud, which there was here, and evidence to support that, then it raises a fact issue that requires a trial.
Is this the proper vehicle to challenge the deed and whether or not there was fraud in procurement of the deed?
I think it's a proper vehicle for us, Judge, because what we're challenging is the summary judgment ruling by the judge that wouldn't allow us a trial. And basically what we're saying, we should have had an opportunity to go to trial to try the issue as to whether or not my client owned the land or not. And we didn't get a chance to do that. The judge, we believe, abused her discretion by not giving my client their day in court to try that issue on the merits.
But the deed is, at the present time, entitled to a presumption of validity, correct?
We argue that it's not because of the exception to that rule in the common law that says if there's an allegation of fraud, then that presumption no longer applies.
And that fraud challenge, this is the first time it's been raised, right? There haven't been any proceedings or filings or other allegations by your client that the deed had some fraudulent aspect to it.
We think there's evidence in the record, Judge. It was raised in the affidavit by my client. I believe it was raised in our pleadings at the trial court level, so it's not being raised on the first time on appeal.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean on appeal. I mean just in general in this proceeding as opposed to during the prior period of time.
Well, I think that was the only proceeding there was at the trial court level. There wasn't any other proceeding before that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And your client also had a motion for summary judgment, but you are not challenging the denial of that.
No, Judge, I'm strictly focusing on the judge granting the state summary judgment motion because we think we should have had a trial.
Okay.
Yeah. As the judge, as Chief Justice just mentioned, the primary issue in this case is whether the trial court erred by finding that there was no fact issues regarding the ownerships of the tanks and the land in this case. And we think that she clearly erred because there was no evidence in the record to support her claim that there was that those things, that there was no fact issues on either of those questions.
Is it really the normal summary judgment standard for us in this case? I mean, are we looking at it de novo, or is it because of the statutory presumption? How do we review a summary judgment in that context?
I think it's de novo, Judge, because it's a question of law to the extent that the judge granted summary judgment. So you get to look at the record in this case to see if the trial court improperly applied the law in this case, which we believe that she has.
But, for example, the statute seems to require some sort of documentary form of evidence. So in that situation, can you then just file an affidavit saying, here's what actually happened and they're wrong? Is, because of the way the statute reads, is that even summary judgment proof capable of raising a fact issue?
We think that it is, Judge, because in this case there was no other vehicle available to raise the issue. The only other mechanism would have been a correction deed, and in this case we asked the person who filed the incorrect deed to file a correct deed naming the right person as the grantee in the deed, but they refused to do so. So the only avenue we had, which was what we filed, which was my client, which was an affidavit stating that he clearly did not own the land, it was not his land, it was not his tanks, and should not have been a party in the case. So I agree with you, if there was other evidence available, but in this case, that was the only mechanism we had because we asked the grantor to correct the error through a correction deed. He refused to do so. Moving on, in their summary judgment motion, First Amendment summary judgment motion, the state of Texas made several claims or to support their claim for summary judgment that was considered and seemingly the trial judge was in agreement with. One of those was whether, we just talked about, my client was the owner of the subject property and the tanks that are the subject of this lawsuit. I guess, however, we contend that we believe for the summary judgment standard, for the judge to have granted summary judgment, there had to have been uncontroverted evidence, and in this case, there clearly was not uncontroverted evidence. There was substantial evidence in the record to at least raise a fact issue on the question, and I've mentioned a bunch of those in the brief. One of those was the affidavit of my client where he clearly denied ownership of the tank, denied ownership of the land. There was the affidavit of the grantor, Mr. Parker, for Parker Tire and Recycling, where he says, in fact, that he was the grantor in the deed, but he testified under oath in the deposition that he thought Gulf Oil Company owned the land in question and that they had owned it for several years. He testified that he sold the land to a person whose name was Eva Pryor, who is the brother of my client, but certainly not my client. He testified that he didn't even know my client. He had never met my client and had no dealings with him, although somehow a deed gets filed with my client being listed as the grantee in the deed. I also deposed the attorney who drafted the deed in question, Mr. Black. Mr. Black testified in an oral deposition that he drafted the alleged deed that's the subject of this lawsuit. However, he didn't know my client, he had never met my client, didn't have any meetings with my client, didn't know if my client had any meetings or dealings with Mr. Parker at all. That was the subject of the deed that was filed. He said that Mr. Parker just came to him, asked him to draft a deed, which he did, told him to put my client's name in it as the grantee, which he did, and he filed. Although he had never met him, he had never interviewed him, he had never confirmed that there was any business dealings between them, there was never any contract between Mr. Parker and my client regarding the purchase of the land. The only thing that there is this alleged deed where that seems suspect because even the lawyer who drafted the deed is saying he never met my client.
And if we're going to get into all of these underlying facts, then what are we to do with the notice to purchasers that was dated 12/14/93? I mean, that coupled with the affidavit where it says, well, it looks like it, I don't know, I can't remember the language, but, you know, it doesn't, it looks like my signature, but I don't remember signing it. What do we do with that?
Yeah, what I did was that I went back and asked the notary who notarized that document whether she had met my client, whether he had in fact signed the document, whether she remembered him doing so. I think those are the only kind of things we can do when the client is saying that he doesn't remember if he signed it or not. Yeah, I think my thought was to go back and ask the notary if she remembered the matter, she remembered him, if she remembered himself.
Well, and whose burden is it at this point to attack the deed?
Well, I think it's our burden, and we've attacked it. And I think what I'm saying is I think we at least had enough for a trial, that there shouldn't have been a summary judgment granted, because I think the issue was raised and we presented enough evidence to raise a fact issue to support our claim that we were entitled to a trial on the merits as to whether my client owned the land or not. That's what happened. So again, on the claim by the state that there was a legal title, we think there's clearly not any uncontroverted evidence in the summary judgment record in this case to support that claim. Therefore, the judge should not have found that my client, as a matter of law, owned the land and the tanks. On the claim by the state that my client had not complied with the requirements for registrations under the tank, again, there was no uncontroverted evidence in the summary judgment record to support that claim. In fact, the record evidence supports the opposite claim. I think if you look at the affidavit of Esker Sawyer, who was the TC&Q investigator who went out there to investigate the claim and looked at the record in this case, you know, in his sworn oral deposition testimony, he testifies that according to the TCEQ records, that the two owners of the property in question was a Hang Dung and a Parker Tire and Service. And he admitted that the underground storage tanks that they sued my client over had actually been abandoned by Mr. Parker when he filed documentations with the TCEQ saying that he was permanently taking the tanks out of service back in 1988, which was over 35 years ago. But then the state turns around and sues my client recently for a claim that they really had with Mr. Parker 35 years ago is what our contention is. Regarding the claim by the state that my client caused, suffered, allowed, or permitted violations of state law, we think there is clearly no uncontroverted evidence in this record to support that claim. There's other than this alleged statute, I guess, concerning the deed itself, there's no allegation by the state that my client did anything. There's no facts in the record to support that he, not only that he owned the tanks, but that he used the tanks, that he ran any business with the tanks, that he violated any state law while he had the tanks, or that he didn't properly dispose of the tanks. I think in this case, the record is really clear if you read the affidavit of Isaiah Pryor, I guess the brother of Mr. Pryor, who lives in the town in the area where the tanks are and familiar with the area. He says that my client never ran any business on that land. He never conducted any business on that land. He never bought the land. He never owned any land. So there's several people making these claims, all under sworn, either oral deposition or affidavit testimony, claiming that my client does not own that land. But despite those, what we think is compelling proof, the trial court incorrectly granted a summary judgment on those matters. Regarding the claim by the state was entitled to injunctive relief for alleged violation of an order of the TCEQ, there's no order of a TCEQ in this record. There's no claim that my client, in fact, there's not even any claim that my client violated any order of the TCEQ in the pleadings by the state or any documents that was filed in support of those pleadings. Therefore, it was error for the trial court to find that somehow there was a violation of state law and some order of the TCEQ in this case, because none of those claims are supported by the evidence in the record. Regarding the claim that my client owed the state money for attorney's fees, for investigative costs, for civil penalties, and for injunctive relief, again, there's no uncontroverted evidence to support any of those claims. In fact, the whole issue about the time period for the alleged violation was sketchy. There was no conclusive proof to show when the alleged violations occurred or how long they went on for. But yet, the trial judge granted a summary judgment motion awarding civil penalties and injunctive relief in a case where there was no clear proof of any time period for live violations, and certainly no evidence of any actual or threatened violations of any of our environmental laws. In fact, I think the TCEQ investigator testified that when he went out to investigate the tank, the only thing he found in the tanks was a little water. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. I guess we'll hear from you on rebuttal. I see your red light's going off.
Yes, sir. Thank
okay.
you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Prislop.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. I want to pick up with your first question and then move to Justice Goodwin's question on the notice to purchaser and to Justice Field's question on the overall workings of the statute, which is the statutory definition of owner under the Underground Storage Tank Program. Prior has taken the definition of owner under under Chapter 26, 342, subparagraph 9, and I believe we provided an exhibit to the court to help aid review of that statute. It's rather than in the block form that it comes in. But the conflation that Pryor is making is the distinction. There's two different arguments. One, ownership of the tanks with an attack on the deed. And the ownership of the tanks is a separate issue that's decided by the definition of owner in the statute. And that definition is clear. There's three tiers of ownership under this statute. The first tier is the tier that follows the federal definition of owner of an underground storage tank, and it's the person that owns the actual tank system. And that definition is derived from federal law, and Texas has adopted the federal program, and we implement that federal program in Texas. We've been delegated and authorized to implement the federal program in Texas. But the Texas definition then goes on to include different parts. And that is, if the ownership is unknown, uncertain, or in dispute, then it falls to the fee simple owner of the property of the surface estate. And that's established by, in this case, a recorded deed that was filed in 1993, which has a presumption of validity under our law. We're a deed, a record notice state under 13.02 of the property code. It's an unambiguous deed. There's no allegation that the deed has any ambiguity in it. It's properly recorded, notarized, and it includes all improvements. In certain circumstances, the legislature recognized that underground storage tanks, although they're classically improvements as a matter of law and typically attached to the realty, they can at times be detached and severed, and other people can own these. The reasons for that are varied. Significant liabilities can attach to underground storage tank systems because, as the legislature points out in Chapter 26.341, as an overall policy of the state, they leak. And they can cause contamination of groundwater and surface water resources, and that's expensive to clean up. So at times, the tanks can be severed and left with perhaps the distributor of the.
But here, pretty much all of the hooks that you guys have into Mr. Pryor are through the deed or through the fact that he is the ownership of the surface property, correct? Because even the registration was in the prior owner, and I guess we're looking to him as the successor. I mean, is that the argument?
So, well, let's look at that third definition of, and that's
Sorry,
that third
I was trying
paragraph.
To jump past you.
It's a great lead-in because then it gives good background for this case. So, the registered owner, what does that mean? Well, all owners of tanks are required to register them with the state or the EPA in EPA states. In Texas, owners are required to submit the registration form. That's a statutory requirement and a regulatory requirement. And it alerts TCEQ, in this case, of who owns these tanks. And the TCEQ, this is I call it like an administrative efficiency part of this statute, where the legislature has authorized the TCEQ to rely on its own records that are submitted to it for an initial determination of who owns the tanks. Someone's not going to say that they own the tanks and they don't own them. What could happen, though, is what's happened in this case, is when TCEQ went out in 2007 and investigated the site, they found that a subsequent owner had not filed its registration. And so until such time as documentation demonstrates to the executive director's satisfaction, and in this case when the inspector went out in 2007 and contacted the existing registered owner, which was Hein Dong, The registered owner before that was Parker Tire and Service Company. He had sold it for a period of time via vendor's lien to Heindong, who registered the tanks. Heindong had defaulted on his loan, and then it reverted back to Parker Tire and Service, and then was sold to Matthew Pryor. But TCEQ contacted the registered owner, Heindong. He said, "I don't own this anymore." It went back to Parker Tire and Service. Contacted Parker Tire and Service. "I don't own anymore. I sold it to Matthew Pryor." They checked the Jefferson County tax records, and that's when they discovered the recorded deed, setting up the next tier of this definition, which is the fee simple owner of the surface estate.
And again, isn't that where the issue attaches? Because, I mean, and all he's suggesting is that there's a material fact issue as to whether or not he owns that property and whether or not that deed is illustrative of that.
So yes, there's a threshold issue there of his attack on the deed itself. And then there's a separate issue of whether the evidence that he submitted demonstrated that someone else owns the tanks. So on your question as to the deed itself, he's made a mere allegation of fraud. The state is not a party between his fraud claim, or his claim for rescission of this deed is between Pryor and Parker Tire and Service. It's not between any other third party. It's between those two parties. The state is not a party to that allegation of fraud. The state's case is to determine liability for the underground storage tanks, which are remaining in the ground. Perhaps they had leaked. We don't know, but they need to be removed. That's a requirement under the regulations, TCEQ's regulations.
As far as the setting, though, for him to bring a challenge of fraud as to this deed, I mean, is this the proper setting for it, or what's his remedy?
His remedy would be an action filed against Parker Tire and Service, subject to whatever statute of limitations might attach to that claim for fraud or rescission of that deed, that transaction between those two parties.
And until that he does that, he has not raised, in your view, or what you're arguing is, until he does that, he has not raised a material fact issue in this proceeding.
Correct. He's made another allegation with respect to going along with this fraud claim, and it goes to I never assented to this transaction, I think is the base allegation for the fraud. That's rebutted by the best evidence in this case, which is a recorded document that Justice Goodwin mentioned. And I want to get back to her question of the notice to purchasers, which was filed. And that's required under Texas Water Code 49.452. This site lies within the boundaries of a drainage district, Jefferson County Drainage District Number 7. And under this statutory provision, they're required to provide, purchasers of property are required to sign, and the purchasers are required to sign under 49.452G, this notice to purchaser, which is alerting them that of this purchase, that a drainage fee assessment may be assessed by this county. This notice is dispositive. If you're going to look outside the deed of assent and acknowledgement, it was signed by Matthew Pryor. In his testimony, the only testimony that he provided under oath before the court in his special appearance, he noted, and it's in Reporter's Record Volume 2, it looks like my signature. But beyond that, it is his signature because it was signed before a notary public. And in that document, he acknowledges purchase of the property. There's a phrase right above his signature line that states, "The undersigned purchaser hereby acknowledges receipt of the foregoing notice or at prior to or execution of a binding contract for the purchase of real property described in such notice or at closing of the purchase of the real property." He is acknowledging it. And then in the line before it, it's for lot number 7 through 12, block number 100 of City of Port Arthur, Jefferson County, Texas, which is the same description as found in the deed. And this was filed contemporaneous with the deed. This was signed before a notary public. And to overcome an instrument in writing duly acknowledged, proof must be unmistakable.
Well,
otherwise,
titles. I want to ask you about that. With the question I asked earlier, our normal summary judgment standard, of course, you can bring up affidavits and deposition testimony and things of that nature to raise a fact issue. Are we not under that standard given the statutory construct here? And then the second part of my question is, I'd like you to address what other legally acceptable means of proof are in that statute.
So for review, I mean, this is a straightforward application of the statute. There's a recorded deed, has a validity of presumption. It's not ambiguous. It is clear evidence of fee simple ownership of the estate that's been on record for over 25 years in the Jefferson County tax records. Tax notices and tax assessments have been sent reliant on that deed. Clear application of the statute would say that there's no fact issue at all. It is a clear case unless and until the person can demonstrate by other appropriate documentation or other legally acceptable means. Well, what is legally acceptable means? That's not defined. In this case, what was presented, there was no documents. There's no evidence of sale documents either on record or in any anyone's possession that was ever disclosed or discovered in discovery. And so you have a series of not me or he said, she said testimony, which is mostly, it's all incompetent. It's not credible, it's conclusory, it's unclear, it's not direct. It's full of contradictions, and it's readily controverted by the actual only documents that are available, which is the recorded deed, which includes the property and all improvements, and a notice of purchaser evidencing acquiescence to the transaction. Matthew Pryor, in his testimony that he provided, was asked, do you have any documents or, and he says no, to support your assertion that someone else owns the text, no. It's just your belief, yes. Curtis Parker asked the same question. This is just all your belief, yes. Someone doesn't become an owner of underground storage tanks or property just by someone saying, I think they own it. Requires evidence and documentation of that in writing. Isaiah Pryor, his brother, he gave a series of rambling statements about who he believes may own it. An unbelievable, incredible conclusory. Same with Curtis Parker. Curtis Parker's entire testimony is undercut. He was the prior owner of the property as the president, not he himself, Parker Tire and Service Company was the prior owner of that property. And he registered as president of that company, his company as owner of those tanks. Milton Black was the lawyer involved in the transaction, and he stated if the tanks were in the ground, they were part of this transaction. Esker Sawyer, the state's investigator, was there merely to establish from January 7th, 2016 to November 18th, 2016 for 316 days. The tanks remained in the ground. And that's where the penalty comes in for the assessment under 7.102 of the Water Code. And also for the continuing violations to justify the need for injunctive relief. Manowar v. Cadle is an example of an underground storage tank case where there was a severance and there was a sale document. So Justice Field, you asked, you know, what would be sufficient documentation. Well, there's an example of a case where there was sufficient documentation. There was a recorded deed and a recorded agreement evidencing severance of those tanks.
Can you ever rebut the statute with just affidavit testimony?
Not with the testimony that was presented here, that's for sure. What would rise to the level of sufficient testimony? We would have to look at that and see, but in this case, it certainly was not met. There's no fact issue created at all by any of this testimony under 166 AC of the Civil Procedure Code.
So it's fair enough to say the state's position that is the other legally acceptable means. It's not necessarily that you're putting a restriction on it that it has to be documentary, but it has to be competent proof of actual ownership rather than just a person's belief.
Mere belief would not be enough. It can't be in this case. I would not think it would be in most cases. We're a state that requires such property transactions to be in writing. And in this case, none of the testimony would be considered competent or credible, and the court properly considered it and rejected it in the face of the deed. The state has authority to seek civil penalties under Water Code 7.108, injunctive relief under Water Code 7.032. That injunction merely follows the statutory requirements for closure and cleanup of tanks, and that's under 30 Texas Administrative Code 334.55. Civil penalty was proper. No one disputes that the tanks are still in the ground. His only allegation to rebut is based on ownership, and he's clearly an owner under the statute. We ask that unless there's any further questions, I ask that the decision be affirmed, and I'll cede the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Prislow. Mr. Jones, I've got you on rebuttal.
Okay.
I think it's important to remember that I think one thing Mr. Prislow, the statue he was talking about, where he was talking about the statue and how it holds, I guess, the fee simple owner at the time responsible. I think if you read that statue, I believe there's also language in there that kind of touches on the point I think that Justice Fields was touching on, which is that I think the statute says if there's a dispute in ownership, that for purposes of the TCEQ rules, the last known registered owner of the tanks is the owner for purposes of enforcement by the agency. So I think if you go in with the black letter law of the statute itself, then the statute says that if there's a dispute of ownership, which there was here, then the last registered owner of the tank is the registered owner of the tank for purposes of enforcement. So I think that the statute may deal with the issue all by itself.
Well, the statute says if the actual ownership of the underground storage tank system is uncertain, unknown, or in dispute, the fee simple owner of the surface estate is deemed the owner of the tanks, right, unless there's rebuttal through appropriate documentation. And what I'm curious about is, what is your position on what that means by appropriate documentation? It goes on to say, including a deed reservation, invoice, bill of sale, or other legally acceptable means. What does that last phrase mean?
Yeah, I think I researched that issue because I think that issue did come up. I believe the trial judge asked that same question, and unfortunately there wasn't a case that spoke directly to that, but I think we can take the practical and general meaning of that, and that it would certainly include if there's the type of evidence that we've put forward. Certainly it would include an affidavit by Mr. Pryor, legally accepted mean. It certainly would include oral deposition testimony by the grantor in the deed saying it's not his land, which we have. It certainly would include oral deposition testimony by the lawyer who drafted the deed saying he never met the grantee and didn't know if there was actually and he never drafted any a contract for the transfer of land, as I believe you need to do to not violate the statute of frauds in this case. So, I mean, I think if legally acceptable means anything, other than an actual deed, like I said, which we tried to get the grantor to correct the deed, but he wouldn't, it certainly would include all the types of evidence that we've provided, which is an affidavit from Mr. Pryor, which is testimony from the grantor saying it's not his land, which is testimony from the lawyer saying that he never met Mr. Pryor, which is testimony from the person who Mr. Parker says he sold the land to, which is Eva Pryor and Isaiah Pryor, saying that he sold the land to them, and he didn't sell it to my client. So although there's not a clear definition under the common law that I found, I think the common sense approach would mean that it would certainly include the type of sworn testimony that's in the record before this court. On point two, there was a question about claims being filed against other persons like Mr. Parker and others. I think if you look at the record in this case, I tried to bring them in. through a third-party petition in this case, because I argued to the trial court that, you know, in the interest of judicial efficiency, rather than filing a separate lawsuit against Mr. Parker and the other parties involved, I thought it made sense to get all the parties into this case to get this issue of ownership resolved one way or the other. The state argued against a third-party petition, argued that the trial court either shouldn't or didn't have the authority or the jurisdiction to allow those necessary parties to be included in the case, and the trial judge denied my request to include them in the case. That's why they're not here. On the question about the penalties being just, I think if you look at the testimony of Escasari, I think he said he started working for the agency in January, I believe he said, of 2016 or 2017, I believe. So obviously he couldn't have had personal knowledge of anything that happened in terms of alleged violations before that. So I think you heard Mr. Prisloff tell you that we're over 300 days of alleged violations, but certainly Escasari could not have had personal knowledge of that because he wasn't even working at the agency at the time the alleged violations actually occurred. So there was no support in the record for any of the claims for civil penalties based on the personal knowledge of the TCEQ investigator who was a recent employee of the agency. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Thank you, Mr. Prisloff. Interesting case. The case will be submitted and you all can be excused.